This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Brian Friel. Brian is the federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government, and he focuses on multiple award contracting and the trends there, and the various programs, and how government and contractors are interacting. What those trends look like. Hey, Brian, thanks for joining me on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Roger.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Brian, just last week on July 18th, you participated in, a panel discussion on multiple award contracting that the Coalition for Government Procurement sponsored at the Tower Club out in Tysons, and you had a lot of great insight regarding the current trends in multiple award contracts and some of the key contract vehicles. So I'm looking forward to that discussion first, but I'd like to get a little of your background. So how long have you been with Bloomberg, and what is Bloomberg Government?
Sure. Well, I joined Bloomberg Government a year ago next month, and Bloomberg Government itself has only been around since January of 2011. And the basic idea of the service, it's a website, and the basic idea of the service is to provide an analysis of the impact on business of government actions. So we analyze the potential effects of legislation, the potential effects of regulation, and then in my case, the effects of contracting decisions on the companies that do business with the federal government.
And to that end, one of the studies that you worked on was entitled Big Macs, and I love Big Macs, I must say. Not a plug for McDonald's, but Big Macs are a big part of government contracting. What was that purpose of that study, and can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, well, when we were talking to folks in the industry about their information needs, what do they not have the data that they need to do their jobs well? A lot of people were telling us that they couldn't get a really good handle on what multiple award contracts were being used for, which kinds of purchases, by which agencies, even how many there were, and how much business was being done, even on some of the well-known contracts. So we went about looking through the federal procurement data that Bloomberg Government compiles, and we applied an analysis that was developed by me and by my colleague Paul Murphy. Now, Paul is a two-decade long veteran of analyzing federal procurement data. He previously was the founder and CEO of a company called Eagle Eye, which is well known in federal procurement space.
Yes, absolutely.
And so he and I went about the attempt to identify all multiple contracts in use across the government, what their names were, which agencies were using them, what kind of purchases were being made on them.
Well, it's quite an impressive study. I've taken a look at it myself, and from your perspective, what were some of the key things that you guys found? Or first, what's the key things, and then maybe is there something in there that's sort of surprised you?
Sure. Well, the sort of top line number that we came up with was about a quarter of federal spending, or about $130 billion. Last year is spent through multiple award contracts. Now that includes both the schedules run by GSA and the Veterans Affairs Department, and what we call non-schedule MACs, which are multiple award contracts run by other agencies or just generally outside the schedules. And that's where we focused our analysis, because the schedules themselves, the data is pretty robust that the GSA puts together, but there was much less understanding of what was happening on the non-schedule MACs. And so we found that just in fiscal 2011 alone, there was about $83 billion spent through non-schedule MACs. And we found that there were more than 1,100 of them being used across the agencies. And they ranged from really huge multi-port contracts, such as the Navy's Seaport E, through which the Navy purchased about $6 billion in engineering services and other professional services in 2011, down to really small construction MACs, where a few little companies at a base, say, in Guam or North Carolina are competing for construction-related orders.
Well, you know, it's pretty. That's some pretty impressive, you know, scope. And one of the things I'm curious about, because when I was a member of the SARah panel, we had an interagency working group, and also just a across the groups that we had, we tried to get a handle on the data with regard to multiple ward contracting and the task orders and the volume through there, and we found it very difficult to do. Was that a big challenge for you, and how did you meet that challenge?
It was a big challenge because there are codes in the federal procurement data that are designed to tell you whether a purchase is made through a multiple award contract or not. But those fields are really used inconsistently. So, for example, if you look at the data that the way it's coded in there, Oshkosh's major Army vehicle contracts are coded as multi-board contracts, and they're really not. Oshkosh is doing that work itself and not competing on an ongoing basis.
Right, it's a single award contract.
Sure.
Right, yeah.
So we first applied sort of some basic criteria to identify the universe of potential multi-board contracts. So, you know, is it coded as a delivery order? Does it say that it's an IDIQ, which is an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity vehicle, which could either be single award or multiple award? Does the description of requirements include keywords like MAC or MAC order or MATOC, which is multiple award task order contract, the phraseology often used in construction contracts? And then we literally went through sort of contract by contract and did research on agency sites and company sites to help to identify which purchases were actually made through contracts, through multiple award contracts, and then just coded them all in our own database so that we have this sort of ongoing data set that we can constantly update as new contracts are awarded or as old contracts expire.
Right, and so with Bloomberg Government, is that this type of service of parsing this data and providing the business intelligence, both in terms of what's going on in terms of volume, but also regulations and that sort of thing, and the impact there. Are you seeing your customer base? Is it both contractors and government? Is it more government? I mean, a lot of what you're getting is data that the government has, but you guys are able to actually pull it together and make it meaningful, it seems to me. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Yeah, we've found most of our current users are companies. And I'll give you an example. That I was talking with some folks from one company who do most of their federal contract work through a few multi-board contracts with civilian agencies. And I showed them the data that we compiled and showed them how their company compared to the other companies they compete with on that MAC. And they were surprised to see that they were the top company on that contract. They just didn't have the data to provide them with that kind of insight to tell them where they stood in the market and sort of from a competitive analytical standpoint how they were doing. But it's a similar truth is at the agency side of things. Often the agencies themselves don't have a really strong handle of what contracts they have out there and what's being used for which kinds of purchases. And that makes sense. I mean, the Army, for example, more than $100 billion of work is contracted out by the Army, and the Army is a huge worldwide organization. So this kind of data can help even the agencies themselves sort of understand how they themselves are doing the buying.
Right, and I think that better understanding could help them figure out where they could do it better or more strategically or whatever. That sort of business intelligence, seems to me.
Yeah, the Army, just to give an example, we grouped the MACs into various categories, such as professional services. And the Army, we found, was using more than 100 different multiple war contracts for professional services purchases last year. The Army doesn't have one central MAC that it uses.
That's pretty amazing, that many contracts for professional services.
And I think we'll probably get into this a little more later, but we'll probably see more of a shift to centralized contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest model is the Navy Seaport Enhanced contract, which is a mandatory contract for professional services purchases, and which the Navy now uses for $6 billion of purchases every year.
And to that point, Brian, we do have to take a break right now, but when we come back, we'll be talking more with Brian Friel. Brian is a federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government, and we're talking MACs, GWACs, just government procurement through multiple board contracts and what the current trends and where things are going. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Friel. Brian is a federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government. He focuses on federal procurement and MACs and GWACs and all those wonderful multiple award contracts. And, you know, Brian, to that end, it's almost like learning a whole new language. Well, procurement in and of itself, it's like learning a whole new language when you get into it, all the acronyms and stuff. But, you know, why don't we just talk a little bit about the variations of multiple award contracting and some of the definitions around it. And obviously the big one is a multiple award contract. Can you tell the listeners what that is?
Sure. Well, the sort of basic difference between a multiple award contract and a single award contract or a standard contract is that there's more than one company involved, right? So for a MAC, an agency first pre-selects a vendor pool. So the agency will put out a request for proposals, and companies will respond, and then the agency will award the company's positions on the contract. Now, often you'll see press releases go out when this happens. So, for example, the Homeland Security Department runs a contract called Eagle that has a $20 billion ceiling, and so you'll see press releases that say such and such company just won a $20 billion contract from Homeland Security. In fact, the company hasn't won any money yet. That $20 billion is just a ceiling over the life of the contract that all of the companies that are awarded slots on the contract can compete for. So, for example, with Eagle, there are about 50 companies that were selected by Homeland Security in 2006 that have been competing ever since for orders placed by various components of the Homeland Security Department, Coast Guard, Customs and Border Protection, et cetera. Every time one of those bureaus has something that they want done in the technology services realm, they first have to look at Eagle and say, okay, I'm going to compete this among those companies only. So, for example, the Transportation Security Administration might say, I need somebody to run my computers. And so TSA will issue a task order on Eagle, and only the companies that were pre-selected for Eagle can compete. So the hundreds of thousands of companies that are outside of the Eagle group can compete. And the basic idea for the sort of value for an agency is primarily speed. Sort of quality of potential proposals. The notion being that because the vendors have been pre-qualified, you're only going to be getting proposals from companies that really have the capacity and the capabilities to do the work. And the speed, because you're not putting the request out on the open market for everybody under the sun to compete for under standard federal procurement rules, you can get the work awarded much more quickly and get the work going much more quickly.
Yeah, and I think that's that description goes to and I'd like to hear your views on this, but it seems to me the heart of the matter with regard to the value of these type of multiple award contracts, it's the fact that an agency can establish a limited pool, a smaller pool of contractors, qualified contractors, to efficiently and effectively sort of compete for requirements. And that sort of works for obviously the contract awardees, but it also works for the government. Is that sort of fundamentally that sort of streamlined act process at the task order level and the limited pool, is that what you see agencies, why they like these contracts?
That's right. Yeah, that's the big driver. Now there's sort of another aspect of this, which is that prior to the increased use of multiple award contracts, there were many more single award contracts set up like MAX in the sense that task orders or delivery orders were placed on those single award contracts without ongoing competition. So a MAC, to critics of single award IDIQs, is an improvement because there's ongoing competition. So that way the government can drive down costs over time instead of going to the same incumbent contractor over and over again. Right. And in fact, in 2008, Congress established a requirement that any contract with a potential, any IDIQ contract with a potential value of $100 million or greater, and that's over time gone up to $103 million or greater, has to be done through a multiple award contract unless the head of the agency grants a waiver. So definitely putting the thumb on the scale toward multiple award contracts for major procurements.
Well, Brian, I have to tell you, back in, ancient history in the dark ages, when I used to work for the government, I worked on a lot of major IDIQ contracts, information technology, and they were the single award type. And you were talking, with ceilings of a couple hundred million dollars, and they were being awarded to a single contractor. And, it was sort of a couple things going on there. It took so long to award the contracts by the time the contract is awarded, all the technology that formed the basis of award was already obsolete. So the second the contract was awarded, the government and the contractor were substituting new equipment, that had replaced the stuff that was in the proposal. And secondly, there was always that ongoing issue. Now it was an IDIQ ongoing that the agency could place orders, and it was efficient and very streamlined in that sense. But it also, was more difficult for agencies, from my perspective, being in government at the time, to get the latest technology to continue to sort of emphasize competition. So I think the idea of the multiple award contracting authority, was designed in part to address that.
That's right. Yeah, and just another sort of potential benefit of multiple award contracts as opposed to single award is related to potential fraud. So if you remember last year, the biggest procurement scandal in history occurred on a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers contract, through which the prime contractor and the subcontractors and some government officials were skimming the contract for millions of dollars for their personal benefit, and that was a single award contract that was taking place on. And you can imagine that if it had been a multiple award contract, the other vendors might have raised an eyebrow and challenged it if they were seeing all the orders going to the one company.
Right. Yeah. That sort of pressure from competition and multiple contractors being there does, I think that works for both industry and for government. So there, within the multiple award or multiple award contracting sort of sphere, there's different flavors or different types, right? There's GWACs. What are GWACs?
Sure. So GWACs are government-wide acquisition contracts. and they are specific. They are very special, specific kind of MAC. They are have to be approved by the Office of Management and Budget, and they are generally for technology work. So examples of multi-port contracts are NASA's SOUP, which stands for Solutions for Enterprise-Wide Procurement, which is for generally computer hardware and software, sort of delivery orders. There's Alliant, which is the General Services Administration's big technology services contract. And the basic idea is that NASA, GSA, or NIH is the other agency that runs these, administer the contracts, and any agency generally across the government can use them, and they pay a fee to the administering agency for the for its use. And one potential benefit of these contracts is that the sort of strategic sourcing notion that agencies can combine their buying power and lower drive down costs through competition on these contracts.
You know, isn't there a, you know, another benefit when you mentioned, you know, a trend towards centralization a little bit or reducing? You mentioned the Army example with 100 professional services contracts. It seems to me that the idea of having, you know, an Alliant or, you know, those multi-board contracts or the GSA schedules for that matter is the opportunity to reduce, you know, transactional cost over time. You know, instead of having to create new contract and compete the task orders, you go directly to the task order level and just do that competition, focusing on all the requirements, all the, you know, contractual issues in terms of conditions have already been addressed. Is that,
right.
It seems like a more efficient model.
That's a good additional benefit. The government incurs a lot of costs creating all these different contracts and then administering them. And contractors incur a lot of costs bidding on each of these contracts, setting up the different teams of subcontractors to do the initial bidding. And they have to sort of park some money because a lot of these contracts take a long time to actually get to award and get through the protest period. So there's a lot of interest in industry toward using GWACs or consolidated vehicles rather than seeing continued proliferation. I'm not sure if I mentioned, but the number of multi-board contracts that we identified in 2006 was just about 400, and that has ballooned to more than 1,100 in use in fiscal 2011.
Right, that doesn't in a time of diminishing budgets and, you know, and the overhead and bid proposal costs associated with creating those contract vehicles, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But you know, we have costs here, Brian, and so we have to meet those costs. So right now we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more with Brian Friel. Brian is a federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government, and we'll talk some more about we'll be talking some more about multiple award contracts in the government space and future trends. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Brian Friel. Brian is a federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government, and we're talking multiple award contracting. And, you know, Brian, this segment, why don't we start talking about some of the, you know, what you're seeing out there and what you saw when you did this report. You know, what are some of the most popular or, I guess, fastest growing MACs? I mean, it was a great stat you gave us in terms of, you know, the number growing in from 2006 from 400 to today. There's over 1,100 of those. I mean, clearly some are much more popular than others. Can you talk about some of the most active ones?
Sure thing. Well, I'll start with one of the most popular government-wide acquisition contracts, which we discussed in the previous segment, and that's SOUP, which is run by NASA. It's now in its fourth version. Generally, Macs run for, say, 7 years, 5 years, 10 years at a time, and then are replaced by recompeted contracts, often with more companies participating. And so NASA's SOUP contract is now in its fourth iteration, and it did $2 billion in sales in 2011, making it the most popular GWAC. The second most popular GWAC was Alliant, run by the General Services Administration. This is a technology services contract, and it saw $1 billion in contract obligations last year. That's after only being in existence since fiscal 2009. And one thing I'll note while talking about Alliant is that the value of potential orders placed on Alliant so far is about $9 billion.
Oh, wow.
But it gets spent out over a long period of time. So the biggest order placed on Alliant, this was in fiscal 2010, but really sort of the spending on it picked up in 2011, was a task order that SAIC has that was awarded by the State Department through Alliant. It's worth up to $2.5 billion over 10 years, just this one task order. And already more than $200 million has been spent out on the task order. And this is for a major overhaul of the State Department's computer equipment. So you can really see that some major work is being done on these contracts. Now, the total amount that we saw spent through GWACs in 2011 was about $6 billion, which sounds like a lot, but then remember I said that $83 billion was spent through non-scheduled multi-war contracts last year. So that means the vast majority of the money actually gets spent through contracts run by the agencies themselves. And I think I mentioned, but Seaport Enhanced, run by the Navy, is the largest, and again, $6 billion in work last year. Another big contract is...
Well, how many contractors are on, Brian? Do you have a sense of how many contractors are on Seaport E?
Yeah, Seaport Enhanced now has about 2,900 contractors that participate in it. Seaport is kind of a unique contract. And I mentioned that most contracts run 5-7 years at a time. Seaport awards its contractors 15-year contracts with a base period of 5 years and then 2 5-year option periods. And it awards them on a rolling admissions basis, on an annually. So Seaport Enhanced could exist in its current form sort of indefinitely. And as companies reach that 15-year limit, they can submit a bid for a new contract and sort of keep the work going. Now, Seaport Enhanced, like I said, has 2,900 companies. 385 just joined last week. But only about a quarter of those companies actually win any money through the contract.
Really?
And that shows sort of a challenge that companies face getting on these contracts. Remember, just getting on these contracts is just a hunting license or a ticket to the dance. It doesn't guarantee you any money. You then have to go out and fight for task and delivery orders on every competition.
Yeah, and are there other contracts that, that's the biggest one that's agency specific? Are there any other agency ones that are you see growing or trending upward?
Yeah, Eagle at the Homeland Security Department. It's a central technology services contract that's grown every year since it was created in 2006, and in 2011 had $1.7 billion in work done on it. Now it's being replaced by a new version, Eagle 2, but the Eagle 2 contract has taken a long time for the department to select vendors for. It's still in the process of going through the many, many proposals that it got before selecting them. So those kinds of delays on recompetes are actually good news for the incumbent contractors because orders can continue to be placed with Eagle. And there are some very huge task orders placed on that. There's a $1 billion task order on Eagle to run the department's classified networks. There's another similar contract for technology services called Encore 2 that's really been booming. It's the second version of the Defense Information Systems Agency's central tech contract, and it had more than $1 billion in work in dollars obligated last year, too.
Now, in these contracts, like our Seaport E or Eagle or Encore, do you know, although they're agency specific, are there other customers who can use those or not? Like sort of outside the Navy, or is it just purely Navy, or, you know?
Well, the Seaport is primarily used by the Navy. They've opened it up to a few agencies. So DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, uses it, and the Defense Threat Reduction Agency has used it a bit. But the Navy has sort of avoided really opening it up to other companies. Encore 2 is used by lots of different buyers throughout the Defense Department, the Army, Air Force, Navy. Now, you know, Seaport Enhanced, you know, has been so popular, and it's in part because there's been a huge growth in professional services purchases in the government over the past decade, and GSA is creating a contract for similar types of services called OASIS, and it's not a GWAC because it's not just for technology, so it's a broader contract similar to Seaport. And that's one that lots of agencies will be able to use. So you can sort of see Seaport as a model of for OASIS, sort of broad technology and other complex professional services being ordered through it.
Yeah, and so what do you think the potential market for OASIS looks like?
I think the place to look for is the big question for OASIS will be who will be the customers. So, for example, it's unlikely that the Navy will be a major user of OASIS because
they have their Seaport E.
It's mandatory.
Right.
But agencies like the Army and the Air Force that don't have central professional services contracts, their potential customers, a lot of the civilian agencies don't have enough buying power to really justify the creation of such a contract. So you could see them using OASIS. But, you know, one caveat is that there still are contracts in this space being created. So Homeland Security is in the midst of awarding positions on a contract called TABS that will provide similar professional services to what OASIS is going to be offering. So one thing for companies to do when they're looking at bidding on contracts like OASIS is looking and seeing, well, what kinds of contracts are agencies currently using for similar services, and what are the potential customers?
Right, and it seems to me when you talk about, you know, DHS creating a contract vehicle and GSA doing the same thing, you know, I guess one of the things that sort of, you know, and what your thoughts of it that gets lost in the shuffle there is that, you know, there are professional services under the GSA schedules as well. And how big a market is that from your perspective?
Well, you know, we did an analysis of contract type. This is sort of a roundabout way to answer your question, but we did an analysis of contract type on multiple order contracts. Are the orders being awarded as fixed price orders, as cost plus, as time and materials? And the biggest growth category on MAX, on non-scheduled MAX, is in the cost plus category. And that is a reason why a lot of this work won't move to the schedules right now, because at this point, cost plus is not permitted on the schedules. There's been some discussion of changing that, but for the moment, that means that cost plus type work is more likely to be, you know, the agencies looking to do cost plus professional services work are going to be looking at MAX rather than the schedule.
All right, Brian, we do have to take our last break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more with Brian Friel. Brian is federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government, and we're talking MAX, GWACs, GSA schedules, all those wonderful things. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are talking to Brian Friel. Brian is a federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government, and Brian spent a lot of time looking at a lot of data involving multiple award contracts. Man, I don't envy you when you talked about all that stuff you looked at earlier in the show.
Right.
All that, man, that's a lot of work.
Glad it's done.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Hey, I'm glad it's done. It's a good work product, you know, and I appreciate it. I look at it all the time. And we're talking about your Big Mac study right there that you can get from Bloomberg Government and Brian. But Brian, you know, one of the trends I wanted to ask you about in multi-board contracting, and it's going to be new, but or it's being implemented as we speak to a certain extent, is, you know, the use of small business set-asides and just small business volume through multi-board contracts generally. Can you, you know, provide some of your insights on where things are going there?
Sure. Well, you know, the big number always in small business contracting is 23%, right? That's the government-wide, you know, sort of legal, congressionally established goal for small business prime contracts. The government wants to award 23% of its prime contract to small businesses. So we looked at the trend on non-schedule max over since 2006, and in 2006, we found that that the small businesses were winning 18%, so, you know, well below the sort of government-wide goal. By 2011, the share of orders on max being won by small businesses had risen to 23.7%, so above that. And a key driver of that has been an increasing use of set-asides on max, or the creation of max that are entirely set aside for small businesses. So an example is the General Services Administration's GWEC called 8A Stars, which is now in its second iteration, 8A Stars 2, that's only open to companies that participate in the Small Business Administration's 8A program for economically disadvantaged groups. So 8A Stars is one example. Another is the Homeland Security Department's First Source contract for technology products. That's only open to small businesses, and the First Source 2 Mac, which is in the process of being awarded, is similar that way.
And also, there's Alliance Small Business as well, right?
And Alliance Small Business, right? And CIOSP, Chief Information Officers Solutions and Partners. The new version of that also has a separate Mac set aside for small businesses. So this is a growing trend across the government, and it's interesting that the Office of Management and Budget and the Small Business Administration have been issuing guidance and rules really encouraging this. But in this case, I think it's policy sort of catching up with practice, and not only are agencies sort of setting aside max for small businesses, but they'll often set aside certain kinds of work just for small businesses. So an example is the Army's is working on a new logistics contract, and it will reserve orders for valued at $35 million or less at bases in the continental U.S. just for small companies. So only the small companies that are awarded positions on that contract will be able to compete for that the orders of that level or lower.
Yeah, I guess one of the things when you mentioned that's a good observation, because I used to see it in the schedules where agencies were limiting consideration to small businesses, whether they called them set-asides or not, and were sort of doing it on their own, and they were getting credit for it. And but now what we are seeing is, you know, a more formal policy that's being implemented, I guess, pursuant to the Small Business Jobs Act.
That's right. Yeah, and
Small Business Jobs Act of 2010. Right. And I guess it's going to be interesting to see how those stats play out over time, because my sense is that that any contract where there's both small and large businesses, that the new rules are going to make it even, I guess, more complicated to actually set aside things than less complicated. I don't know if you have a sense for that or not.
Well, that's an interesting observation, Roger. I mean, the one of the key value propositions of these contracts is that they're supposed to allow agencies to award work much more quickly, and you can really see the contracts becoming more and more complicated, right, with these various set-asides and lots of different pools of contractors, and fairly recently the GAO decision allowing task orders to be protested more frequently. So in some sense, over time, the the sort of the speed of these contracts might be diminished.
Right, and actually the speed to getting to small businesses are going to be diminished as well. I mean, it could be counterproductive in terms of how it's implemented. And I actually do, and this is one of my thoughts, is that, you know, maybe there's an opportunity that's being lost here. I mean, with the Small Business Jobs Act and the ability to, quote, set aside orders, I would submit that, you know, the SBA, the OMB, whatever, had an opportunity to figure out new, more innovative ways to enhance opportunities for small business consistent with commercial practice under these contracts. But it seems that right now what is being done is they're just taking the same rules that apply to other contracts and applying them to these multiple award contracts. And, and the government just announced that, you know, it hadn't met its small business goals overall, that 23%. And, you know, that's under a certain set of rules that they're now trying to apply to multiple award contracts. I think there was an opportunity to look at some innovative solutions, and I'm afraid that's going to get lost.
Yeah, from the way I look at it, the kind of cats out of the bag or the cows out of the barn in this case, and it's moving in this direction, at least for the short term. And so large companies have to adjust their strategies accordingly, mm-hmm. and they're going to have to be subbing more frequently to A-Days and to better-known businesses and to Hubzone businesses. And
right.
And I've already seen just sort of anecdotally a lot more effort on the part of big companies to find the small businesses that are participating in these MACs to set up teaming arrangements.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a accurate comment. So the cat's out of the bag, and the idea of set asides. That's something that's, you know, consistent with the goals of trying to increase opportunities for small business. I guess my only point was there might be some new ways to do things, some innovative solutions that people could look at that would benefit small businesses as well in this context. And and I think that, you know, as often happens in government, they're just taking one set of rules and sort of applying it over to this dynamic. And, you know, maybe there was another way to look at it. I don't know. It's just one of my crazy thoughts.
Well, one of the types of arrangements that that I've seen, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a trend yet, but I've just seen it on several of the recent awards, is joint ventures between 8A companies and the large companies that are in mentor protege relationships with them. And from the view of the 8As and the large companies, the benefit for the government is that when orders are placed with these types of joint ventures, the agency gets credit toward its small business goals, while the government also gets the benefit of the sort of broader capabilities of the large company that's participating in the joint venture with the 8A. I mean, the sort of flip side of that is that these joint ventures in the past have been used as pass-throughs for large companies, and the 8A companies sort of just acting as a something of a front for the big ones. So the government is sort of watching that closely. But there may be increased use of those kinds of joint ventures, particularly on MACs with these kinds of set-asides.
Yeah, to try to meet the government's needs and do it consistent with the rules that are out there right now. Yeah.
Right.
Hey, so Brian, we've come to the end of the show. I want to thank you for joining me on Off the Shelf today. Today, my guest has been Brian Friel. Brian is federal business analyst for Bloomberg Government, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.